Supporting WHYY, the Rutgers School of Business at Camden encourages working professionals in the region to take the next step in their career by earning a master's degree. The Rutgers University Professional MBA and the Professional Master's in Accounting degrees are accelerated programs designed for working professionals with classes held on Saturdays in Cherry Hill. An information session is at 9 a.m. on Saturday, May 9th at the Cherry Hill Library. Details at pmba.rutgers.edu or 856-225-2700.
I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Ahead this evening, one man takes his push for a pension fix to the streets. Following the 2013 building collapse in Center City that claimed six lives and injured a dozen more, the city of Philadelphia has paid more attention to hazardous structures, and now the city's making the largest, imminently dangerous structures a priority for demolition. WHYY's Tom McDonald reports.
That's an excavator's grappling claw attachment tearing into a building at 8th Street near Rising Sun Avenue in the Hunting Park section of Philadelphia. Mayor Michael Nutter says the city's working hard to tear down the buildings that could become problems if they aren't taken down.
Philadelphia, of course, as we know and love our town, is a quite historic old city. We're proud of our history and our heritage, but like many old cities in our part of the country, we also have many old buildings that in many instances no longer serve our needs, and some have fallen into disrepair. Sometimes dangerously so.
Now the fire department and licenses and inspections are working together to find and target dangerous buildings for demolition. Fire Commissioner Derek Sawyer says this steps up existing collaboration.
As you know, we talk about reducing the risk in the community. And when we talk about reducing risk, there's a step that you go through. You have education, enforcement, engineering, economic incentive, and emergency response. When you get to emergency response, it's a little bit too late.
The group that investigated the deadly collapse at 22nd and Market Streets recommended the city go after dangerous buildings more aggressively. Councilman Dennis O'Brien has legislation that goes after other issues.
The legislation specifically was designed to reduce firefighter and community risks. These fires are suspicious and incendiary. So the legislation specifically calls for inventorying, inspecting, securing, marking, and systemically tracking these buildings and these structures across agencies.
70% of the large crumbling buildings are in the 7th Councilmatic District, which encompasses parts of Hunting Park and North Philadelphia. I'm Tom McDonald, WHYY News.
Philadelphia's six Democratic mayoral candidates have participated in dozens of forums to discuss their ideas and zing their opponents. Now, with less than 2 weeks left before the primary, the question is, are their messages getting through to voters? Well, toward that end, we gathered a few residents from the North Philly neighborhood of Brewery Town to watch last night's final televised mayoral debate. The story from WHYY's Katie Colinari.
Being Cinco de Mayo, it was a busier Tuesday night than usual at Sarah's Place, a tiny bar on the corner of 29th and Flora Streets in Brewery Town. So we cranked up the volume on the flat-screen TV to watch the very last mayoral debate on 6ABC. The debate covered territory the candidates are accustomed to by now. School funding, bringing businesses to Philadelphia, and the tension between police and communities. But the thing that got the crowd in Brewery Town sitting up on their bar stools was tax abatements?
Now my thing is, if you already established and you've gotten a tax abatement once, you shouldn't get another tax abatement.
Warren Hill has lived in Brewery Town for most of his 53 years, or as longtime residents like him call it, North Philly. Sitting next to him was Nicole McDonald, who's lived in the neighborhood for a year and a half. Tax abatements aren't the sexiest topic, but there's a good reason it hits home here. Like a lot of neighborhoods in Philadelphia, Brewery Town is changing. Some call it revitalization, others call it gentrification. The mayoral candidates disagree about what to do with the city's 10-year tax abatement on new developments, so residents like Julie Dietrich will have a stark choice to make. She's lived in Brewery Town for 6 years and was surprised by State Senator Tony Williams' answer that he'd want to keep the tax abatement outside Center City. Dietrich thinks only high-profile projects like the new Comcast Tower get those benefits.
They're going to build that in Brewery Town? I mean, they're the ones that are getting the tax abatements, right?
No.
Right, but he's saying, we'll give these abatements to people who are building in the neighborhoods.
Hill explains that tax abatements have already helped bring in new development in Brewery Town.
new houses, new buildings, they got tax abatements, all of them.
And yet then they're talking about we don't have enough money to pay for the school district.
Polls show most voters are split between Lynn Abraham, Tony Williams, and Jim Kenney, who's recently taken the lead. A large number of voters are still undecided. And after last night's debate, it was clear these residents fall into that camp. McDonald, Dietrich, and Hill all say they're torn between one of the top three candidates who've had decades in public service and Doug Oliver, the youngest candidate in the race.
He really does come out on top, even though he doesn't have any of the experience.
Well, as an original thinker, yeah.
McDonald still isn't so sure Oliver should get her vote, but Hill encourages her to go for the candidate she really likes.
Because in our Constitution, you don't have to have experience in politics.
So how to choose? McDonald and Dietrich say they've got more research to do. As for Hill, clearly the most outspoken of the group, he says it'll come down to which candidate is the most convincing liar.
Okay, because that's all they ever do to get voted in anyway.
And the candidates, they've got less than 2 weeks left to close the sale. Katie Colinari, WHYY News.
Now, this report was part of our series, Around the Corner, How Philly's Future Looks from One Changing Neighborhood. To hear more of our reports on Brewery Town, check out newsworks.org/mayor. All the talk in Harrisburg about Pennsylvania's indebted pension funds hasn't yielded much action over the past few years. Republican senators want to seek concessions from many current employees and the eventual end of the debt-ridden traditional pension system covering some 370,000 workers. Under a proposal presented today, many current employees would be required to contribute more to maintain their current benefit. Future employees would get a 401k-style plan and a cash balance plan. Now, Democrats say the proposal would punish workers for the failings of public officials. While the legislators don't seem to be in much of a hurry to come to an agreement, WHYY's Mary Wilson reports on a newcomer to the scene who's trying in his own way to nudge those politicians towards some difficult votes.
A funny thing happens as you get older. So many of the terms you used to define yourself fall away. Your job, your hobbies, your zip code, it matters less and less. That's what happened to this guy anyway.
My name's Barry Shutt. I'm just a grandfather who's worried about his grandkids.
Some people keep their worries to themselves. Shutt worries in public. 2 days a week, you can find him with a folding chair and a sign outside the cafeteria in the state capitol basement. He started last fall.
Well, I just kind of got frustrated. I said, no one's talking about what has to be done.
Shutt's cause? The state's deeply indebted pension funds. He's worried about what lawmakers might do about them.
Borrowing to fix the pension problem is not a fix. It just kicks the can down the road, and it puts the burden on our kids and our grandkids. This generation screwed it up. This generation needs to fix it. And that means paying for it.
Shutt is a former state employee. He gets a pension, so he benefits from the state's boost to worker pensions years ago. He says he'd give it back now. It's an empty threat. No one expects a judge to approve that.
But that doesn't prevent the union from saying, all right, let's sit down and figure out how we can make this a more reasonable pension plan.
Lots of people have been talking for lots of years about the problem of the state's two pension systems, one for state workers, one for public school employees. The state owes the funds about $53 billion. It's a debt that grew when the state sweetened retirement benefits, skipped payments, and investment earnings tanked. Now the bills are coming due and threatening to eat up larger and larger chunks of the state budget.
It's a cookie jar. We've all had our hands in that cookie jar, some deeper than others, but we've all had our hands in that cookie jar.
People in Harrisburg have been talking about a fix, but they talk about borrowing money to bring down the debt a little bit, or closing the pension system to future employees. Few people propose simply paying down the debt, which is what Shutt wants to see.
And that's probably going to mean new revenues. Come up with a tax that's dedicated to fund this pension problem until it's brought current.
The good news for Shutt is that the Republicans who control the state Senate want to make public pensions a top priority. The bad news is those senators don't seem to share any of Shutt's ideas. Pat Brown is a Republican senator and a powerful one. He runs the Senate Appropriations Committee. He says he'll introduce pension reforms this month.
I am very serious about the need to do this. You know, this is not something I've been ever a flash in the pan on. I'm very serious about this, and hopefully our whole assembly and the governor will be as serious in the end. We need to be.
But public pensions have been a top concern among Republicans who have controlled the state legislature for several years now. Neither the House nor the Senate has even voted on a plan to fix them. Shutt is hopeful. You have to have a little optimism to keep camping out next to the Capitol cafeteria week after week, setting up the little folding chair, the sign, watching the well-heeled lobbyists and lawmakers walk by.
I'll probably be here 2 days a week till the budget passes to see what they've actually done, if anything, on the pension problem. Someone's got to try it.
Shutt just got invited to a press conference. A newbie House Republican, John McGinnis, is proposing to pay off the entire pension debt in 20 years with some combo of spending cuts and tax increases. McGinnis himself says the bill's a long shot, but Shutt doesn't mind. It's a start. Mary Wilson in Harrisburg.
In other news today, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie's top Treasury official says state revenues are on pace to exceed projections, and the administration will put that cash toward New Jersey's public pensions. Treasurer Andrew Aristoff appeared before the Assembly Budget Committee today, just one day after the administration announced it expects some $200 million more in tax revenue. The administration says the cash will go toward the state's outstanding nearly $1.6 billion pension payment. The treasurer's testimony comes on the same day the state's Supreme Court heard arguments between the administration and public unions over a dispute about how much government must pay toward pensions. Overcast, 71 degrees on Independence Mall, it's 617. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. Cloudy overnight, falling back to 58 degrees. Tomorrow, enjoy intervals of sun and clouds, Thursday's high 78. Plenty of sunshine come Friday, high 82 degrees, to the weekend. Partly sunny days, up to 82 on Saturday, 86 degrees the high on Sunday. Still ahead, a violinist's encounter with a homeless man becomes a lifelong lesson on the joy of music.
And he was so happy he started yelling, "Thank you, you really deserve a song. I'll sing you a song." My mom said, no, please. You really don't have to do that, sir.
NewsWorks Tonight continues on WHYY.
I'm Dr. Russell Kaufman for the Wistar Institute, a proud supporter of WHYY. The opening of our new seven-story Robert and Penny Fox Tower has provided flexible, shared laboratory space for the recruitment of scientific teams. Wistar Science is all about scientists with different skills working together. And together, they can tackle the most difficult problems facing cancer research. Learn more about Wistar Science at wistar.org. Wistar Science saves lives.
Supporting WHYY, the Chamber Orchestra of Philadelphia celebrates its 50th anniversary with a celebration concert on Mother's Day, May 10th, at the Kimmel Center for the Performing Arts. Maestro Dirk Brosse conducts Beethoven's Fifth Symphony and Triple Concerto and a chamber version of Barber's Toccata Festiva. Tickets available now at chamberorchestra.org or 215-893-1709. That's chamberorchestra.org or 215-893-1709.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Candidates looking to target their message to millennials and more mature adults in the know are increasingly turning to Periscope and Snapchat to get the word out. Let's peer through that Periscope lens with WHYY social media strategist Amy Quinn. Now, Amy, the Periscope app slogan, explore the world through someone else's eyes.
Yes.
Sounds intriguing.
It is intriguing, and it is so new that it sort of reminds you of Twitter in about 2008, when no one really quite knew what to do with it yet. So where there were lots of banal everyday uses as people sort of tried the app out. Periscope is a live video stream that you attach to your Twitter feed so that you are now broadcasting a live video to the entire world through your Twitter.
For candidates and their teams looking to manage the message, though, it seems like they're leaving a lot to chance.
And it is sort of a Wild West situation right now, because the interest of a campaign team is to control message as much as they can. But if you're at a political rally and you're in the audience of that political rally, you could be periscoping the entire rally and getting the things on TV that the campaign will make sure don't make it into the news footage, the things that happen in the crowd, the things that happen behind the scenes. Journalists are using Periscope in Baltimore to broadcast live what's happening on the streets there. One of our photographers used it last week at the Philly is Baltimore march. And it really is a different eye on the street.
Of course, if politics isn't your pleasure, you could even capture a title boxing bout with it.
And, you know, that's one of the areas of concern right now is there are copyright issues. There are issues of privacy and access and fairness. Journalists are used to using things within a set of ethical standards and framework, but the average person doesn't have to play by our rules.
Now, would you use that descriptive Wild West when talking about Snapchat? It's been on the scene much longer.
You know who we have to thank for the presence of Snapchat in political campaigns? One Rand Paul, who joined Snapchat in January of 2014, which is, you know, a million years ago, and has been experimenting with it since then in terms of creating ephemeral messages targeted at younger voters, some who aren't even old enough to vote yet, but who aren't using Twitter and Facebook anymore because, as we often say here, that's where your mom and your grandma are. So if you go where the kids are, maybe they can't vote for you this time around, but they know you, they're comfortable with you, maybe they'll vote for you next time around.
Toward what end? And are other politicians picking up on the usage as well?
Other politicians are picking up on the use of it. News organizations are picking up on the use of it. And Snapchat itself is far enough into its lifespan now that they're figuring out how to use it and have now hired a director of news and are creating original news content for around the political campaign just for Snapchat.
Though by definition, of course, the lifespan of the Snapchat is quite brief.
Yes. The idea of a snap for those who don't use it is that it's a 10-second video that you snap and you send to your friend and they see it. And after about 10 seconds after they view it, it disappears. Of course, nothing really disappears on the internet, which was a lesson many Snapchat early adopters learned the hard way. But it's an ephemeral thing. It's like you're passing someone in a hall and having a quick conversation with them. There are other secret messaging apps that claim to be much more unbreakable and clean. There's one called Wicker that is sort of called Snapchat for grown-ups that's supposed to be used for people in high security situations. Nothing ever goes away on the internet. We know that.
WHYY social media strategist, Amy Quinn. Music students at the Curtis Institute in Philadelphia recently told personal stories about their lives in music, part of a public storytelling event created by First Person Arts, wherein the classically trained musicians played music while telling their stories. One of the storytellers was Gergana Harlampieva, a Bulgarian-born violinist who grew up in both the Czech Republic and Boston, Massachusetts. For our latest installment of Story Corner, she spoke with WHYY's Peter Crimmins about a strange encounter on New Year's Eve when she was 10 years old.
The story you told starts on New Year's Eve.
Yes.
In a city in Czechoslovakia.
Yes. We were in Olomouc, me, my mom, my sister, my aunt, and my uncle. I remember it was just really gloomy, and it was terribly, terribly cold. I mean, it was, we shouldn't have been outside. It was that cold, and we bundled up. And there was, I mean, there were very few people. You know, in the Czech Republic, people are very traditional, and the holidays is family time. So everybody's in the houses with their families, so we were the only strangers outside.
And you're basically sightseeing?
Yeah,
on the worst day of the year?
We are, yeah.
As we were walking down a small cobblestone street passing a 17th century church, we see this homeless man wrapped in a really big coat and clothes, and he had a really long beard. And he was holding a stack of fresh newspapers that he was selling that day. My mom turned around, and as was her custom, she got some cash out of her wallet to buy one of his newspapers. He was so happy because we were probably the only people that walked down that street that day. So my mom decided to give him some extra cash since it was New Year's. And he was so happy, he started yelling, "Thank you, you really deserve a song. I'll sing you a song." My mom said, no, please, you really don't have to do that, sir. It's my pleasure, you don't need to sing. But he insisted. he started singing this really long, complicated Czech poem set to the music of Ode to Joy.
You know, I was 10 at the time, so I didn't recognize it. But my sister, who was 17, she recognized it. I remember that it was actually a morbid poem. It wasn't romantic or anything. It was, you know, along the lines about, you know, death and dead children. You know, like Mahler, that kind of style.
He kept singing for about 4 minutes, because I remember we were standing in the cold, just freezing. So my mom really, like, had to stop him. She said, "How'd you know all this?" Because we were so surprised. And he said, "Oh, I'm a musician. I used to be in a professional rock band back in the day." And my mom said, "Really? And we're all musicians here." And then he looks down at the 10-year-old me and says, "Do you play an instrument?" I was really shy, but I said, "Yeah, I play the violin." He proceeded to take a coin out of his pocket, and he puts it in my hand and says, "Here, it's for good luck." To this day, I actually have the coin, and I carry it in my violin case to remind me of that man, and to remind me that we can really find surprise and joy anywhere, from places that we don't expect. Thank you.
You know, if I look at the coin, if I'm having a really rough day, then I feel like I just absolutely can't play the violin, which I have many of those days, actually. You know, it just reminds me, you know, there are people out there that love music, and that's why I'm here. That's why I do it. You know, they believe in music, and they believe in musicians, and we just have to keep going. We have to keep plowing through.
Gergana Harlampieva is a violinist at the Curtis Institute. She's playing music composed by fellow student T.J. Cole, who's also her roommate. It was recorded 2 weeks ago at Curtis by First Person Arts. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas, with help today from Brett Rader. Listen again to a story or catch up on a missed show via podcast or online at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
People's Light presents Biloxi Blues, April 29th to May 24th. This semi-autobiographical Tony Award-winning play by American comedic genius Neil Simon follows the adventures of Eugene Morse Jerome as he is shipped off to boot camp during World War II, a classic coming-of-age tale told with wit, heart, and humor. For tickets, peopleslight.org or 610-644-3500. People's Light supports WHYY.
Good morning. An hour ago, I withdrew my name from contention for the Office of State's Attorney.
On the next Fresh Air, interviews with Michelle and Robert King, the creators of The Good Wife, and with Scott Gimbel. Please. Executive producer of the zombie apocalypse series The Walking Dead. Join us.
Tonight at 7 on WHYY-FM.